Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Halloween, everybody. Trick or treat. This is the night when little children are coming to our doors for candy. And we're excited about this Halloween. A lot of things going on. We have scheduled to call in today, writer of the night, Night of the Living Dead, the iconic horror film, John Russo. And I want to announce a few things that are going on here. My neighbor, Phyllis, who's been a cancer survivor, Phyllis Solomon, has been through a tremendous ordeal. She had tongue cancer, and they had to remove her lower jaw, but she's turned her tragedy into a triumph, and she has a decorated her property for Halloween to raise money for other cancer victims and supporting We Spark Cancer Support Center. So I want to give you information on that, and if you're in Los Angeles, you can come here to our neighborhood in the Valley Village section of Studio City and come by and see her wonderful display and make a donation. Here's the website. It's facebook.com/Laurel Grove Lair of Lost Souls. That's facebook.com/Laurel Grove Lair of Lost Souls. And come by, you know, Halloween night tonight. The address is 4913 Laurel Grove Avenue, Valley Village 91607, 4913 Laurel Grove Avenue. And this is our neighborhood. We walk at night, and she has done so much to help people, and it's a fun evening to see her Halloween display. Also tonight, I will be at a live radio feed out at the Sierra Madre Theater. And there's a free show for all the kids that you can bring all your kids and come. A free play. It runs every half hour starting tonight at 6:30 at the Sierra Madre Playhouse. And it's based on the old William Castle horror film, The Tingler. And there'll be a live feed. There's going to be a lot of stuff happening down there, free candy, free Halloween play. And this is all from a benefactor friend of mine who is a producer and very generous individual who's been doing this every Halloween as kind of a gift to the kids and a safe Halloween night. So for information on that, and maybe I'll see you out there, go to HalloweenTimeForZombies.com. HalloweenTimeForZombies.com. And we'll see you at the Sierra Madre Playhouse. So we'll be back in about 30 seconds. Don't go anywhere. Thank you for tuning in to Richard Rossi Live. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and happy Halloween. Halloween's a fun time. I've always enjoyed it, and it makes me feel very childlike. It's interesting when you look at Halloween, kind of the history of it. Some of the religious fundamentalists I was involved with in my young adult years are very against Halloween. And they see it as a very demonic thing. But it actually, if you go back in time, it comes from All Saints Eve, which that's where we get Hallow Eve, or Saint means holy, All Hallows Eve. That evolved into Halloween. And my sister Elizabeth Rossi wrote a script called All Saints Eve that was made into a horror film. But in the Catholic Church, they would have recognition of the saints, those who had been good and godly people who had died and went on before. And, you know, they would dress up as the various saints. And so some, though, are concerned at times about the demonic aspect of it, you know, particularly in some of the church world. There was what they call the Satanic Panic back in the 80s, the Satanic Panic led by Mike Warnke and Jack Schick had a tract, some tracts and comic books that the Satanists were around every corner, you know, grabbing puppies and grabbing young kids for satanic sacrifices. And Zena LaVey at the time, Anton LaVey's daughter, was having to address all this, that, you know, we're not out there doing this. But it just grew and grew and grew, and sometimes, and some mentally unstable people had what they called false memory syndrome, where they started saying, oh, I was a kid, I was one of these people on the altar to Satan. And when the dust all settled and was all investigated, a lot of the people that were, who started the satanic panic, were discredited. John Todd, who was the alleged expert that Jack Chick used, he was discredited later. And, you know, found, I think he died in a mental institution, and he was fabricating all these stories. He was a mentally unhealthy individual. And then Cornerstone Magazine did a debunking of Mike Warnke's story. It seemed like Mike Warnke had told stories about being this long-haired, you know, warlock in charge of all these covens that were sacrificing kids. But when it was looked into, here he was in a, you know, school in San Bernardino with short hair and glasses and kind of looking like the quintessential 50s guy. At the time, he was supposedly this long-haired warlock. So a lot of these stories that when the dust settles turn out to not be true, and but yet it was a real panic. We have a similar thing today with the Illuminati and different things where people, there's something in us that likes to panic and feel some great evil out there. The latest one's the clown, this thing about a killer clown is out there terrorizing. In fact, the school my wife works out here in the Studio City area, they forbid the kids to dress up as clowns this year because there's allegedly some evil clown. And, you know, part of me wonders if they're promoting the new remake of the Stephen King film about the killer clown, and how much of it is actual, how much of it is actual reality or not. It seems like a lot of it has turned out to be kind of fake and kind of a marketing ploy. So, if you want to call into the show and you have any Halloween memories you want to share or questions about Halloween, the number here is 347-637-2379, 347-637-2379. Or you can text your questions in here to our we have a line you can just text questions to, 818-850-5915, 818-850-5915. Or you can email your question to richardrossilive@gmail.com, richardrossilive@gmail.com. So what do you think about the satanic panic, people seeing demons everywhere? I have Christian friends of mine that say Harry Potter opens the door to demons. Don't go to Universal Studios' Harry Potter exhibit or Satan will get you. I have others that say Pokemon, there's a pastor crusading that Pokemon is demonic. There's others. I forget what some of the latest ones are. Unicorns. I've heard all kind of things like that. So here's a time, Halloween, where you really have to get in touch with, is it fun, or, you know, is there any truth to the people that are worried that something evil is out there? There's a lot of conspiracy theories, and Halloween is kind of a fun time where people think about those things. Dungeons and Dragons was a big one. I remember that one, Dungeons and Dragons. Here is Zena Schreck. She now goes by Schreck. She doesn't like to use her name LaVey. Her dad started the Satanic Church, Anton LaVey, but she now is a Buddhist and has kind of renounced her satanic past and says that satanic panic was largely false and these things weren't real. Let's see, hear what she has to say.
The problem with teenagers and Satanism over the past 5 years. The most disturbing, an increase in teenage homicides and suicides with ritualistic or satanic overtones. Animal sacrifices, birds, dogs, church desecrations and burglaries, chalices stolen. They use them to drink the blood of their sacrifices. Do you still believe in Satan?
Yeah. Megan coming to you and make you do wicked stuff and weird things like that.
Like, for instance?
Hurt people. Hurt your family.
In the 80s, I felt compelled to defend Satanism, primarily because you have to understand, growing up in this religion, I almost began to regard it as a kind of problem sibling. It was like my brother. It was under attack when all of these horrendous accusations were attacked. I called my father. The media strategy was to deal with it, and he confessed that he had no media strategy whatsoever. At that point, he was living
Hello,
in
is John there?
Speaking.
Oh, hi, John. It's Richard with the show. Are you good to go right now?
Well, I'm driving, but yeah.
Okay, great. So would you rather we call you back in a few minutes when you get settled?
I'm okay. I'm driving, and I'll just pull over and park, you know, as soon as I can. It doesn't matter.
Okay, well, welcome, John, and we're now live. I want all of you are big fans of the Night of the Living Dead. This is the legendary John Russo on the line, who wrote the Night of the Living Dead, and as well as the prolific author of many horror books and filmmaking books. First of all, I want to thank you, John, because your books on filmmaking have inspired me and many of my filmmaker friends to go out and make films. So thanks for sharing your knowledge as well as the great horror movies that you make.
Well, thank you, and thanks for appreciating the books. I was an English teacher, and teaching's in my blood, and so I was able to do a good job of those books because being a filmmaker and knowing how to teach, you know, I always say that there are filmmakers who write books, but then they don't do such a good job of teaching, and then there are teachers who write books about filmmaking who haven't really done much in the way of filmmaking. So I kind of combine both, but I do want to apologize. One reason I'm driving, I'm really swamped because I was at a convention in Fort Wayne, Indiana, a convention called Fantasticon. And while I was there, my wife was rushed to the emergency room, and she's out of the ICU now and doing okay, but I am running around trying to catch up with things and handle all the stuff that my daughter had to handle while I was gone. So that's
well, our
the
listeners
situation.
And I
so I apologize to all of you for that, but we'll do this anyway, you know, and I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah, well, we send you our love and thoughts and prayers and everything, and we'll cut this a little bit short if it you know, so that you
No, that's okay. I don't mind how long it is. Whatever.
Okay. Well, I'm
how
glad
long
your
do you expect it to be, or how long would you like it to be?
Well, we probably have about a half hour left on the show, and you're welcome to stay the whole rest
okay,
of the show.
Okay, well, that's fine. Sure.
Yeah, because we're actually live now, and everyone's hearing you. So everyone
okay.
out there, send your thoughts and prayers for John's wife. And I heard some really great news about the Museum of Modern Art having a restored print of Night of the Living Dead and exhibiting that next month, Tom.
Well, that's been in the works for over a year, and I was involved with it all the way, but I couldn't announce it or talk about it. They wanted to make the announcement before we started talking about it and letting the public in on it. So now it's a complete restoration. It's absolutely beautiful, the sound and the picture. It was financed through the Museum of Modern Art by the Martin Scorsese Family Foundation. There was a major article in the New York Times last week, and you can probably look that up. And so there's a New York screening. I won't be able to be at either screening, the Pittsburgh or the New York, because I was booked a long time in advance at a couple different conventions. So, but George Romero will be at the New York screening, and I don't think he'll be at the Pittsburgh one, but a whole lot of Night of the Living Dead people will be. And it'll move around the country. You know, they're going to show it in a number of theaters. I don't have the schedule yet, but you might want to keep up with that. But the elements, all of the negatives and fine grains and everything else were stored in my home when the laboratory went out of business. And so we took very good care of all those things. And when we first went last year to the Museum of Modern Art to have the negatives examined by their people, that everybody was greatly pleased to see what excellent shape they were in. So it's a real good, an honor for Night of the Living Dead and a treat for all the fans out there.
Yeah, we just watched it again out here, and it was fun to recognize you as one of the zombies. I think maybe like the first act or so of the film, you're one of the zombies, aren't you?
Well, I'm not. The very first one is Bill Hinesman, and the one in the cemetery, and I was going to do that part because there I was, you know, I was involved with every aspect of the production from, you know, the screenwriting on up, and I mean, the set decorations, you name it, we did it as a group, and so nobody, I'm working camera crew, and I'm shooting 16mm stuff, and back in Georgia up on 35mm, and loading magazines, and then nobody was there to be the zombie. So I got into the makeup in the cemetery. Those pictures you see where I have the suit jacket on and the white shirt, that was taken in the cemetery. Carl Hardman helped with my makeup, and he took the picture. So then Hinesman showed up. I said, and he had a black suit, and I said, oh, great, you be the zombie, and I'll keep loading magazines. Later, I had to get back into the makeup and be, I was the one that got the tire iron in the head. I fight with Ben and he puts a tire iron in my head, drags me outside and burns me. And then still later, George and I were talking about I said, George, you know, tonight we're shooting the Molotov cocktails sequence and Carl Hardman's going to be throwing all these Molotov cocktails down among the ghouls. And we've made the point that they're just dead flesh and they go up pretty easy and we're going to look really stupid if not one of them catches on fire. George said, well, we don't have a stuntman, we don't have an asbestos suit. And I said, oh, hell, I'll do it.
You're a trooper, John.
Yeah, so we ended up getting three takes with real gasoline, and all three takes,
wow,
the different angles are in the movie. So, and I was also the general's driver in the Washington, D.C. scene in my Army uniform.
I didn't know that.
And,
wow.
Yeah.
So you guys did
then,
you guys do
well,
a
George
drive
is
from...
in that scene.
Yeah,
he's
a reporter with the mic. Yeah.
Yeah. So because the both of us are in the scene, then Russ shot it.
Oh,
so,
is that
I mean,
right?
That's,
wow.
Yeah, that's the way we worked, you know. We had
that's
no
fantastic
permissions at all. Today you'd end up in Guantanamo if you tried to
yeah
do that. We just
yeah,
drove there. We drove there in one day and back all the same day. Drove
wow
there, shot the scene, drove back. We had no money for hotels. We had no permission. We're shooting with the Capitol in the background. Al McDonald, who played the general, and, you know, I got the Army uniform from the Pittsburgh Playhouse Theater School, and Carl Hardman had a Lincoln, and he put the flags on it, and we cast some actors in there, and we went and did it. And Al McDonald, we had to hold blankets around him, but we attracted a crowd, and for him to change out of his civilian clothes and into that uniform, we had blankets around him. So that,
well,
that's
like a makeshift trailer for him.
Yeah, Washington, D.C. is only 260 miles from Pittsburgh. And I said, well, why don't we just go there and shoot it? That'll help us convey the impression that this isn't just happening in a farmhouse. Mm. So that's how it got done.
Well, my daughter that's here with me right now, we took her to see the iconic cemetery in Evans City and the house and everything. That was quite a thrill. And it just blew up. You know, now, you wrote this with George. I'd heard that you came up with the idea that these zombies are like flesh eaters. Is that right?
That's right. Well, George and I were the writers in our group at that time, and we each had a typewriter and each had an editing room. So we'd talk over ideas, and then we'd work on separate typewriters. And I was working on an idea where aliens have come to Earth in search of human flesh, but what they do is they kill people and put the bodies under the ground with a glass over them, like a hothouse tomato thing, you know, and then these bodies are discovered. Well, and then George and I said, whatever we do ought to start in a cemetery, because cemeteries are creepy to people, you know. Even having Costello meets Dracula, it's funny, but it's scary. So George, right before Christmas that year, he wrote about 20 or 30 minutes of a story, not in screenplay form, and he had this girl being chased in a cemetery and so on. And I read it and I said, you know, George, this has all the right suspense and twists and turns and so on, but, you know, who's chasing this girl? You never say. And he said, I don't know. And I said, well, reading it, I thought they could be dead people. He said, that's good. I said, well, what are they after? They don't bite, they don't, you know. He said, I don't know. And I said, why don't we use my flesh-eating idea? So he said, that's good, too. So, you know, I took, we beat the ideas around some more and some other people. We had some scripting sessions. So then I took all that material. George got tied up with a commercial job, and I figured if we didn't shoot this year, this project might die. We might never make a feature movie. So I just picked up the ball and ran with it, which is what we did in those days. Somebody got tied up or incapacitated. Somebody else just carried on. So I rewrote George's part of it and adapted it to the new ideas, and put it in screenplay form, and then wrote the second half of the story myself. And then I gave it to George. Well, George, I had it done, so we were going out the road, out about 10 minutes from downtown Pittsburgh, where our studio was, and we were going to drink wine and grill some steaks at Rudy Ritchie's house. And Rudy was one of our longtime associates and one of the investors in the movie. And while we're sitting around there, George read the script, and he said, there's something wrong with it. I said, what? He said, I don't know. He said, here, Rudy, you read it. So Rudy read it, and he said, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. And George thought for a couple of minutes, and he said, well, he said, I know what. We need another siege. And what he meant was that we needed a time where the ghouls, near the end of the film, where they almost break into the house but don't succeed. And that's a precursor to the final, you know, moments when they do break into the house and overrun it. So we didn't write it; we just did it, you know. And
such a classic.
Yeah,
and
that was a. Go ahead.
Oh, I've heard that you have a new film coming out. Is that true? My Uncle John's a Zombie.
Yes. My Uncle John is a Zombie, and I wrote it and co-directed. There's a trailer on myunclejohnisazombie.com. When I finished the script, I wrote a song called "Beat 'Em or Burn 'Em."
I love it. That's the sheriff's line, right?
Yeah, and he's in the film too. But
oh, great!
The trailer's edited to the beat of that song, and I gave it to Solon Sangaris, who is one of the actors. He plays one of the zombie hunters, and he's an accomplished musician. So I gave him the lyrics, and I said, "Can you write and, you know, write an arrangement and perform this?" And he did, and it's funny. It's really good. It's in the movie and in the trailer. So,
oh, we can't wait to see it. And by the way, if you're listening, to stay in touch with John, the John Russo, T-H-E John Russo, R-U-S-S-O.com. That's the best site for you, John?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and I think the trailer's up there. There's a lot of information there.
Okay.
The film's almost done. It's the editing. I mean, I've seen it all. I know what it is. It's really good.
Uh-huh.
The trailer got 60,000 views in its first 5 days.
Wow.
And we have other stuff once we get it totally finished. We're going. The sound is being tweaked at Skywalker Ranch by Brian Chumney, who's a close friend of mine, and that's the last thing that needs to be done. So. The way it happened was that, you know, I'm friends with Gwar, the heavy metal band, by the way. The drummer, Brad Roberts, and his wife, they are also in the movie. And so is Russ Striner, Debbie Rashawn, Tiffany Shepis, Lloyd Kaufman, and George Cassano, the sheriff. So what happened was that I'm also friends with Kirk Hammett and the lead guitarist at Metallica. And, I was at his Fear Fest Evil in San Francisco, where he displays his multi-million-dollar collection of horror props and stuff. And an Epix TV channel was going to shoot a series of commercials to promote a slate of zombie films that year, 2014. So they did a 30-second spot with me where they had me made up as a zombie, and then the script was that I'm talking about I'm drinking beer in my hometown and the door is bashed in and a horde of zombies floods in, and next thing I wake up and I'm a zombie. That's the gist of it. So the producer, Mike Ruggiero, emailed Rob Lucas, who was back at the convention, and he said Russo knocked it out of the park. And out of the 8 commercials, they did Greg Nicotero and Gunnar Hansen and Kane Hodder and Savini and T.J. Souls, etc. Everybody thought mine was the best and the funniest, and I thought, well, if people like this so much, then I should write a full-length script. So I did, and then I wrote the song as soon as I finished the script, the lyrics, you know. So people were getting a big kick out of it. Russ plays a crazy preacher who believes that the dead need to be spiked, have spikes driven in their heads, because they might still come back. So he's trying to... I become world famous. My niece and nephew bring me out in public to advocate for zombie rights, because they think zombies are such a big deal nowadays that people are ready to accept that. I do it, but I'm scared I'm going to get shot in the head. And then I become world famous eventually. And so this guy that's running a zombie hunting camp thinks he can charge hunters $100,000 each for the privilege of hunting me down and shooting me, so I get kidnapped. So, and Lloyd Kaufman's the brains behind the kidnapping.
Wow. Well,
so,
this is going to be such
a fun
film.
The sheriff, he goes on TV because he's getting prosecuted after all these years. There's no statute of limitations on murder, and he's been accused now of shooting the black guy on purpose. Which ties in with Black Lives Matter, right?
That's the
I
ending
mean,
that everyone talks about that ending.
Yeah.
And my wife was so bummed. She's like, he survived all that to get shot. Oh.
Well, it's funny because the sheriff gets, tries to defend himself on TV, but at the same time, it turns out he goes to the zombie hunting camp all the time to shoot zombies. And this black hunter, this girl, she says, you're nothing but a big fat hypocrite. How come there was more white zombies than black zombies, but you only shot the black ones? I ought to drill you right now.
Oh, that's great.
So it has this tongue-in-cheek satire throughout, you know.
It's going to be so much fun. I can't wait to see it.
I ended up, because, you know, I've done roles in a lot of movies, but they're small roles because I never wanted to do anything big because, you have enough to do if you're directing or producing and being behind the camera. But this one I had to play the lead role because I was it, you know.
Your Uncle John.
So I'm the major character in it, and then Rob Lucas co-directed, and Rob did a great job. So, and Rob also he shot and edited the new John Carpenter music videos, where John is going out with his music now and doing performances and stuff. Well, Rob shot the videos. And he also shot the new Slayer video that's been out for a while. It's really good. It was shot in a prison. And he's been a videographer for Kirk Hammett. He was the one that introduced me to Metallica and Kirk. And, you know, we get along great. They said, well, you're one of our favorites.
Is it
now.
True this new film was also shot, John, in some of the great locations of the original Night of the Living Dead in the Evans City area?
Well, yeah, it opens in that cemetery.
Wow, that's great.
And it's the same kind of card, you know, and it's black and white, and it's got the same music, except who gets out of the car instead of Johnny and Barbara, it's me. It's Uncle John
great.
The Zombie with his niece and nephew, and then it turns to color, you know.
Oh, that is great. What a great connection.
It starts happening, so that's the way it goes.
We have a question sent in, John, from some filmmaking class asking what advice you'd have for guerrilla filmmakers. I've read many of your books, and the one that really inspired me to go out and shoot a film was the one, I think it talked about how to make a film under $10,000. But what would be your advice? One of the students says that they're struggling to make it on a shoestring, and they've, you know, because of the lack of money, they have people that will quit on them and their crew or cast. And what advice would you give them on trying to finish a film?
The thing about people quitting, one of the biggest hassles is trying to find out and team up with people who are going to be in it for the long haul. We were fortunate in that that's the way we were. We had the zeal to do this, and our group never broke up. You know, we did break up later, but all the way through Night of the Living Dead and through the 7 years it took us to build up our equipment and everything, struggle and sleep on the floor and starve, we stuck together. So that's a big part of the hassle. I can't tell you everything in this kind of brief moment. The best advice I can say is get the books. When I met Quentin Tarantino at the Land of the Dead premiere a few years ago, he said that, I use this blurb now because it's such a good blurb. He said, I made a movie I didn't finish, and then I read your books and took notes and made charts, and that's what guided me through my first complete movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those two books were Making Movies and Scare Tactics, and published in the 80s and 90s. About a year ago, I revised them, updated them, and combined them in one volume. And so you can get it through my website or on Amazon. It's under the title. The title is How to Make Exciting Money-Making Movies.
Oh, that's
How to
great.
Make Exciting Money-Making Movies. And the first 135 pages of it all deal with my writing methods, which is really important. That's where it starts. So, you know, not only Quentin Tarantino, but Robert Rodriguez and Sam Raimi and so many people, Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier and on and on and on, a lot of famous and not so famous, but, you know, accomplished filmmakers attribute my books to what, you know, that's what inspired them and got them started. And the thing is, I make it accessible, you know. Sidney Lumet came out with a book right after mine called it with the same title, Making Movies. Well, the thing is, Sidney Lumet has been worked with casts of, you know, major stars and huge budgets and all that stuff, and a young filmmaker, for the most part, isn't going to have that. So, you know, my book tells you how to do it on a low budget and make a name for yourself. So, you know, at least you have a shot. And today you can be in business and, you know, with $5,000 you can have a computer and a camera and make a movie and, you know, just go and do it, but learn the craft. You can go a long ways to learning the craft through my books.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed your books and recommend them to everybody listening. And you put, you know, you have been not only a theoretician, you've been a practitioner as well, and you've made, you know, great classics on a low budget. Like Midnight is one that really is impressive, how shot right in Pittsburgh again. That film's a really scary film done, and that was done on a low budget, wasn't it?
$70,000, and that included a $10,000 New York mix and a $4,000 or $5,000 Lawrence Tierney. Everything paid for, done with me and three other guys, mostly, even though a lot of people have credit.
You said a $10,000 New York mix. Are you talking about the sound, John?
Yeah, we mixed the soundtracks at Magno Sound, where Woody Allen and others, Scorsese too, I think, were mixing their tracks. And by the way, what was his name? Aaron. Anyway, the head mixer there said that those were some of the best prepared mixing rolls he ever saw. and that's a measure of how well we knew our craft. We went in there, you know, you can't do them. You can't even do a mix of feature film, even back in those days, for $10,000 unless you're mixing logs and your sound effects and everything is so complete that you can do it in one pass and get out of there. So that's a skill in and of itself. Now you do all this stuff on a computer and it's a lot easier. You know, back then you went in with 8 or 10 or 12 rolls of sound and music, and it had to be pre-mixed, and it had to be, you know, it's just much more difficult.
And I, with all your films from Night of the Living Dead on, I've noticed the sound is so good, and I think a lot of young filmmakers forget the importance of sound. And it's, I heard a girl that was one of the judges at Sundance said, I was at a gathering at the Screen Actors Guild here in Los Angeles and was talking with her and said, well, what do you think about the digital filmmaking? She goes, well, so many people can make movies now, but the thing is, most of them have such terrible, terrible sound. And you know, it just turns you right off. But your stuff always has great sound.
Thanks. Well, Gary Striner, Russell's brother, was our location recording person. And he was fabulous, and he was also a great mixer. We did have our own mixers and dubbers at that time, and most of the mix was done right there at our little studio with Gary doing it. And he would mix even without mixing logs, and he was just great at it. He's the best I've ever worked with. And, you know, he doesn't do that now. You know, he became a big-time producer with commercial films. He did the quite a while ago, the American Express a series with Frank Sinatra and Jerry Seinfeld and so on. And he became friends with Seinfeld and so ended up producing comedian Jerry Seinfeld's movie. And so, and Gary was the person that's kind of spearheaded the whole Museum of Modern Art thing. So he lives in Evans City now, where we shot the movie.
Wow.
So anyway, Gary's really good. And, you know, again, we were accomplished at many, many things, and we could do quite a few things and do them well. We were also educated. George was a fine arts major. You know, Russ was graduated from the Pittsburgh Playhouse School, and that was one of the top, still is one of the top acting schools around here. I mean, not only acting, but stagecraft and whatever. You know, people like Frank Gorshin and Shirley Jones and Gene Kelly, and they all went to the Pittsburgh Playhouse School. Charles Grodin. There are so many, I can't even think of them, but people don't realize that, you know, Pittsburgh was pretty big with this stuff. And now, of course, there's a lot of big-time movies shot here, thanks to Russ's effort founding the film office, and thanks to all of us who shot our movies here and build up a crew base and a fan base and all that.
Well, you sure were, I think, the first to really break out from Pittsburgh, and all of us from Pittsburgh are so proud of what you all accomplished. Is there a release date on the new film about Uncle John as a zombie, or is that still flexible, or do you know when we can look for it?
Well, we want to get it finished, and then we'll probably enter some festivals, and we want to get a major deal on it. I think there's a good chance we will. And so we won't know what the release schedule is until we land at the distributor. We have quite a few who want to see the picture, and that's where it is right now.
Well,
but
it'll
be heavily publicized whenever we are, you know, people will know when it's ready to be shown.
Well, we can't wait to see it, and thank you for joining us, and be assured of all of our thoughts and prayers for you and your wife. I'm glad she's out of ICU, and I've been honored to have you on. You sure are a living legend, and all of us in Pittsburgh are proud of you. I mean, you're just one of the things that came out of Pittsburgh that just blew people's minds. I mean, people were probably shocked to have this incredible film come out of Pittsburgh at the time, because it really wasn't back then in the 60s a place where people thought of movies being shot.
Well, the funny thing is, I mean, a lot of people Pittsburgh, they used to think of it as a backward place, and it used to kind of astound me because Pittsburgh was the third largest, biggest corporation headquarters city in America. I don't know where it ranks now, but still we have a lot of corporate headquarters. All those corporations needed film, so there were about 20 film companies all the way from one-man operations up to people that, you know, like us, it was six or seven full-time, and then there were one or two companies larger than us. But Pittsburgh was the first Nickelodeon was here in Pittsburgh, and the first public television station was here, and also the first radio station, KDKA, which still is broadcasting, all in Pittsburgh. And so many, many firsts did happen here, you know. And so we also became first in zombies.
Yeah.
You know, if you think of it that way, it all fits together.
Yeah, it sure does. In fact, it's the template for zombies. Everyone that makes a zombie movie, even young kids, that whether they know it or not, I mean, the whole, you know, the whole archetype of them coming and eating people. Even Michael Jackson with Thriller acknowledged the influence of what you guys did.
Oh, hell
did.
Yeah, that was a night. I know John Landis, and you know, and that was the purposely an homage and an imitation of Night of the Living Dead. I mean, inspired by. So, yeah, it goes on and on.
And you've also, you know, been so generous in closing, just to tell everyone, please visit John's website and keep in touch, thejohnrusso.com. You've been so generous to other folks. I've met young filmmakers when I visit my mom back in Pittsburgh that took a class with you and studied with you for a couple years. You had a have trained filmmakers in some of the Du Bois College. You have taken time to mentor young, you know, filmmakers.
Yeah, I'm going to do more of that. The business college closed, but I had pulled the program out. They weren't able to promote it. I guess they didn't have the resources. But Brian Chumney, in fact, who I mentioned, he's doing our sound work at Skywalker. Brian came in and took. He was one of our first graduates. He was already doing post production sound, but he wanted to learn more about producing and directing and so on. So he took the course, and you know, he works on he does post production sound on the major stuff there, like Star Wars and Jarhead, and I forget how many, but he's constantly working on out of Skywalker Ranch. So, you know.
Well, your influence is in many different places, John, and we wish you all the best, and we can't wait to see your new film, as well as, you know, the ones after that, because I have a feeling you're going to keep making more and more.
Yeah, I will. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right.
Have a good day.
You too, John. God bless you, and bye-bye. And if you would all keep John in your thoughts and prayers, he was a little, we were a little late getting to John. His wife just got out of ICU, so please keep John and his wife in your prayers. What a legend. And what a great artist, Night of the Living Dead. If you haven't seen this great classic shot in my hometown of Pittsburgh, there's no better Halloween film, if you can even get it. So thank you for tuning in today. Stay safe this Halloween. If you want to join us, we'll be at the Sierra Madre Playhouse tonight in Sierra Madre for the Halloween free show and candy. You know, keep your eyes on your kids if they're trick-or-treating out there. And happy Halloween, and thanks for tuning into the program.